Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen. I'm joined today by Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering the relocation plans for the Isabel Turner Library branch.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. The Kingston Frontenac Public Library, KFPL, has announced that their busiest branch, the Isabel Turner branch, will be closed in fall 2024 for major building updates. Located at 935 Gardner's Road, the Isabel Turner branch was constructed in 1997. With the advancements made in library services, technology, community needs, and accessibility standards over the past 27 years, the building is due for an upgrade. In June 2023, the city issued a request for proposals for the project, which was awarded to VG Architects, a firm with expertise in designing and renovating library spaces. The budget for this project is approximately $4.9 million. With $300,000 allocated to costs associated with relocation. Due to the scope of the work, the branch is expected to close in fall 2024. During the closure, they will temporarily relocate to the Cataraqui Center at 945 Gardner's Road to ensure continuous library services for the community. CFRC sat down with Kristen LeMay, Manager of Projects and Strategic Initiatives with KFPL, and asked her what kind of improvements are being made to the space.
So this branch has been an important community hub in the West End, and we're really excited to revitalize this space to enhance accessibility and functionality. The Isabel Turner branch was built in 1997, so it's time to update important systems like the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. In addition to these facilities upgrades, we will be refreshing the space, so you'll be seeing some new furniture and carpeting as well.
Do you have a specific timeline for how long this can take or where folks can kind of keep up with developments on this?
So the project is slated to start in fall of this year. And for developments and timelines, I'd like to direct people to KFPL's website, where we have a page set up for sharing information about the renovation. So that page will continue to be updated as we have more details to release about the project and expected timelines.
Awesome. Sounds good. This is the largest library branch that we have. So where will these services be located in the meantime, and what changes can people expect come September when reconstruction starts?
We'll be setting up a temporary branch at the Cataraqui Center in late fall 2024. We're happy to be in a nearby location where patrons can still make use of public transit and there's parking available. In the temporary space, we will have a small browsing collection, room for reservations, and we'll also have some computer stations.
Is there anything that's going to be altered, like maybe less access to books or anything like that? Or is it all going to be same old, but in a new spot?
So the temporary space will be considerably smaller than the Isabel Turner branch. So we will have a small browsing collection, but it will be a different experience than the Fuller branch, certainly. And patrons can continue to come into the current branch, the Isabel Turner branch, to enjoy the spaces and services that we have until it closes this fall. Mm-hmm. The temporary branch will be opening later in the fall, and we're aiming to minimize the disruption to patrons' routines. We also have a digital collection that's available 24/7. So if you're looking to read an ebook, listen to an e-audiobook, listen to music, watch a movie, you can access all of these materials from your device, whether you are at home or out on the go.
Once again, that was Kristen LeMay with KFPL sitting down with CFRC to talk about the Isabel Turner branch closure starting in fall 2024. For more information and updates on the project, you can visit the Engage KFPL website. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Up next, we have Dinah Jansen reading a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about the success of Gananoque's Les Festivilles Music Festival.
Thank you, Jesse. The third edition of Gananoque's bilingual music festival, Les Festivilles, wrapped up over the weekend with two performances from Canadian music legend Michel Pagliaro. Les Festivilles was inaugurated in 2022 and promoted as Gananoque's first bilingual festival. The festival is organized by Jen Barrow with support from councillors David Osmond, Amanda Trafford, and McKenna Modler. Last year's edition featured a weekend full of live music headlined by the Paul Langlois Band. The first edition was a one-day concert headlined by Pagliaro. This year's festival was held at the end of the month, strategically placed on July 26th and 7th, and August 2nd and 3rd, also known as the construction holiday in Quebec. The idea is to attract tourists from Quebec. Like past years, this summer's event was hosted at Joel Stone Heritage Park and was free to attend. The festival expanded in terms of length to two weekends, but also in terms of growth as a partnership with the town helped to see an increase in promotion for the festival on social media and around town itself, including with local businesses. The organizers noted that they were excited to see what 2025 brings for Le Festival. Thank you to Keith Dempsey from the Brockville Recorder and Times for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with a special sports report recapping Canadian achievements in the 2024 Paris Summer Olympics.
Thank you, Dinah. This is a special sports report detailing Canadian achievement at the 2024 Paris Summer Olympics. The biggest story coming out of the Paris Summer Olympics involves the ascension of Canadian swimming prodigy Summer McIntosh. 2024 has proven to be the summer of McIntosh, as Toronto's Summer McIntosh has made history in Paris. Prior to the 2024 Games, no Canadian athlete had ever won three gold medals in the same Olympics. But with her outstanding performance over the weekend, McIntosh clinched her third gold medal, setting a new Canadian record. These three golds go along with a silver medal, giving McIntosh four total medals at the 2024 Games. At just 17 years of age, McIntosh is yet to enter her prime as an athlete, which could mean that more records will fall in the wake of the Summer of McIntosh. Summer McIntosh is far from Canada's only golden girl, as world number one ranked judoka Krista Deguchi won a hard-fought, meticulous, and draining final against South Korea's Hoon Min-mi. The bout entered into sudden-death overtime where Mimi, who had been utilizing a very defensive style, was penalized by the officials for the third and final time, awarding Deguchi a point and the gold medal. This victory avenged Deguchi's loss to Hoon Min-mi at the World Championships last year. Krista Deguchi is the first Canadian to win the gold in judo, doing so in the 57-kilogram category. In another first for Canada, Ethan Katzberg set a new standard of excellence for Canadian athletes in the hammer throw. Katzberg attained his new personal best on his first throw of the medal round, hitting over 84 meters. This 84-meter mark would prove to be insurmountable as the British Columbia native won Canada's first ever gold in the hammer throw. Ethan Katzberg wasn't the only Canadian making history in the hammer throw, as Cameron Rogers of Richmond, British Columbia took home the gold in the women's hammer throw finals on Tuesday. Rogers took the lead with her fifth throw of 76.97 meters. This makes a clean sweep of hammer throw by the Canadians, the first time in the Olympics history that Canada has taken both golds in the event. We move now from first-time champions to defending champions, and it was an inauspicious start for the defending gold medalist, the Canadian women's soccer team, who were embroiled in a spying controversy. The IOC would dock the Canadian women's team 6 points and send their head coach, Bev Priestman, back to Canada. Despite these setbacks, the Canadian women strung together three dramatic group stage victories to advance to the quarterfinals against Germany. Unfortunately, the women's team would fall 4-2 in penalty kicks to the German squad, ending what was an extremely eventful stint in Paris for the team. The qualifying stage of the men's basketball tournament was a successful one for Canada. The Canadians have fielded a team of NBA talents highlighted by one of the best players in the world, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. In addition to SGA, Canada also boasts talented guards in RJ Barrett, Jamal Murray, and defensive specialist Lou Dort. This dynamic backcourt, bolstered by the play of Dylan Brooks in the front court, helped Team Canada put up a perfect 3-0 record in group play. Unfortunately, Team Canada would fall in the quarterfinals on Tuesday against host nation France and their generational talent, Victor Wembanyama. Josh Liendo became the first Black Canadian swimmer to win a medal in the Olympics, taking home a silver in the 100-meter butterfly over the weekend. Liendo, a student at the University of Florida, is expected to be a dominant presence in NCAA competition this year. In local Olympic news, Wolf Island's Christina Walker played an integral role in the women's eight rowing finals on Saturday. Walker was part of a silver medal winning squad that finished just a few seconds back of the first place Romanian team. Walker is just 28 years old and seems to be a lock for the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles. Congratulations to Christina Walker and to all Canadian athletes who competed at the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris.
And thank you so much, Jesse, for that report. We now go over to the LJI reporter for CJAI-FM, Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with an update about the status of the Loyalist Township Electric Vehicle Battery Plant.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Umicore informed Loyalist Township this week that the previously approved site work will continue on the Loyalist project. All permitting and processes are set to continue as well. In a statement released last week, Umicore noted that Loyalist Township is impacted by the worsening of the electric vehicle market context and the impacts that it has on the entire supply chain. The project, which broke ground in 2023, is supposed to cost just over $2.7 billion. It's also supposed to create around 600 jobs in the region. The province was set to pay over $420 million, but as of now, Umicore hasn't seen any of that money. Mayor Jim Hagedorn notes the current situation and what staff are doing to better understand it.
It's not actually shut down. So Loyalist staff have met and are going to continue meeting with the Umicore local management team. And this will help us better understand the implications of the Umicore's half year results announcement. And of course, that announcement is what started all the conversation.
Hagedorn explains that the township is still hopeful and working towards getting the project back on track.
We still fully expect the project to be completed and operational, and we're just going to continue working with the local Umicore team to ensure everything is ready to move forward once the final outcome is known from the review.
Hagedorn says the township is set to receive more information from Umicore before their next review is completed and released.
Locally, we've been advised that they expect more information to be available for us to review later this fall, even though the full report will not be completed until Q1 of next year. So that will be a critical time for us, is this fall when we're in discussions with Umicore as well.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. We now go to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE Prince Edward County, Brenda Little, with a story covering Carlo Estate's attempts to set a Guinness World Record with a vegan event.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
Carlo Estates Winery is hoping to enter the Guinness Book of World Records Saturday, August 10th, when they host their 100% vegan culinary long table event at the winery in Prince Edward County. Carlo is the world's first certified vegan winery and has been producing wines since 2010. Organizers are aiming to set a world record for the most people partaking in a vegan dinner at a long table. To submit to the Guinness Book of World Records. The application process entails counting and recording the number of people sitting at the table eating the dinner. The event must be witnessed, and the results will be submitted for review to the records management team at Guinness. The Carlo event will feature celebrity vegan chefs from California, Calgary, and the county, who will serve up a 7-course vegan meal on the long table that will be set up along the path winding through the vineyard, ending at the Dry Stone Bridge. Sherry Carlo tells us more about the event.
Well, the way this happened is Mike of Gusta Gasthouse and Company, Chef Mike Mueller, is an expert at doing culinary experiences that include a long table and a whole bunch of surprises that I don't know if I'm privy to talk about. But he had come to the county to do some long table dinners here in the county that are coming up, and of course marketing it well. I saw it and all the cool kids saw it, and so I reached out to him to see if he needed any wine, and so we connected and resonated with each other, and then he came over to taste the wine, and I guess he liked it. And in that conversation, I told him that when we built the bridge, that I had always had this vision that we were going to have a long table dinner on the other side of the bridge. But I said, here's the catch, Mike. You can do a long table dinner. I would love you to do it, but I'm going to challenge you to do it vegan. And then the idea was that the money that we would save, like the meat savings from not having to buy any animal products, we would donate to some sort of Save the Planet organization. So we ended up choosing Jane Goodall. We have an ongoing relationship with the Jane Goodall Institute of Canada. And we've done some charity work with them, and they do a lot of stuff besides saving the chimpanzees. They do a lot of stuff to help not only save the planet, but to save people, to teach people how to be self-sustaining and, you know, to grow their own food and have clean water. And because if we don't look after each other, they can't look after their endangered species either, because they're in a desperate situation. So it's a really great cause, and it's something that resonates for all of us. We all want to look after our beautiful home, so we thought it was a good cause to choose.
The Dry Stone Bridge was built in 2007 by Sherry's late husband, Richard. It covers the Hubs Creek that runs through the vineyard, and it is one of the largest of its kind in North America. The bridge will be the backdrop for the event. Sherry chats more about the bridge.
We want an authentic destination at the winery that people can say, I was there. And so the keystone that's in the bridge is actually our logo. And it just talks about how we all work as a team to do the best that we can. Because if we all stick together, then you have this beautiful thing. But the minute that one person falls out the keystone, then the whole thing can fall down together. So it's kind of the emblem of the winery.
The 93-acre property was purchased by Sherry Carlo and her late husband Richard in 2005, with planting beginning in 2006. Wine production started in 2008, and doors opened to the public in 2010. Sherry, a longtime vegan, had been adamant that she would not drink Richard's wine, but to her surprise, he had been using a vegan process all along. Sherry talks about her vegan journey.
I realized that I was basically vain and cheap, because I realized if I ate vegan in college that I could save money and I could keep my weight down. And then I went to a festival at Harborfront, put on by the Toronto Vegetarian Association, and walked into the wrong room at the wrong time, or the right time as the case may be, and saw like how animals are treated in slaughterhouses. And I was so appalled that I wanted nothing to do with it. And so I just went vegan. And then, of course, I fell off the turnip truck when I got into advertising. And then it wasn't until I moved out to the county full time in 2010 that, you know, late at night again, not much to do. So I'm on the internet and I'm seeing how animals are treated in slaughterhouses. And I was like, that is it. I am not participating in this anymore. And I found out that wine was also not vegan. So I told my late husband, Richard, that I would not be drinking wine with him anymore either, because I wasn't participating. And so he set out to prove to me that he had been accidentally making his wine vegan all along, because he wanted me to drink with him. So that's why vegan. But it turns out that we actually save our carbon footprint set by 70%. by doing plant-based approach to running the winery and our lifestyle.
What is vegan wine and what is the difference? It's all about the process during the fining and chapitalization steps where animal or animal byproducts are not used. Egg whites and powdered milk are commonly used as coagulants by winemakers, but the Carlo vegan process uses bentonite clay. When chapitalization is necessary, they use sugar sourced from a local supplier. Plans are in place for the Vegan Long Table event, August 10th, but, of course, all eyes will be on the weather. For the Local Journalism Initiative, FrequencyNews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little from CJPE Prince Edward County for that story. Next is the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Cobourg, Jeff Gard, with a story about the Cobourg Fixed Route pilot project launching in September.
Cobourg's Accessibility Advisory Committee heard Thursday about the new fixed transit route one-year pilot project that is expected to begin September 2nd and run in conjunction with the current on-demand service. The fixed route will operate Monday to Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and the on-demand system, which has been in place since 2021, will continue to operate 7 days a week. Riders call or use an app to book a ride based on availability. The estimated cost of the fixed route pilot project is $72,550. The new fixed route, which is similar to what was in place before Council switched to the on-demand system, was initially planned to be a 30-minute loop with approximately 16 stops, but Transit Supervisor Renee Champagne said staff opted to switch to a one-hour route with 35 stops covering a broader area, including the east and west ends, both high schools, the Cobourg Community Center, Library, Hospital, Walmart, Northumberland Mall, Legion Village, and more.
So that was to capture additional riders and provide a higher level of service for popular destinations and high ridership in certain areas. We took the stop data that our technology provided and reviewed. So using that information and populating heat maps with our GIS department, we determine the highest demand locations as well as popular destination areas in town.
Champagne said the ease of the route was a big factor when setting the schedule.
So, you know, right-hand turns, using traffic lights, using as many transit shelters as possible, being on the correct side of the street so passengers do not have to cross the street to board. We avoided all rail crossings as well. That would slow the bus down.
One of the former long buses will be used for the fixed route, with a backup being one of the new smaller buses used for the on-demand service. Champagne said a number of test rides were conducted in May and June using a school bus to help determine the route map and stops.
Both the vicinity and the new unit 913 will have automated stop announcement. So we did a series of trials. We picked different days of the week at different times of the day too to capture morning ridership and afternoon for traffic congestion, anything that could arise. So when we did the trials each day, we did a 3-hour duration. So we did the loop 3 times, and then on subsequent days, we did the same.
Committee member Adam White asked Champagne if the signage will be the same color and layout as the former fixed route system, and if transit maps could be placed at the bus stops.
The signage is actually a little better laid out. It's the same sizing. I love the idea of having a timetable and map where we can do so. There's a couple of stops where it would just be a post. So that would be a little bit more difficult, but we can definitely look into posting at, you know, high used areas such as No Frills, the mall, where we have the space and our shelters to do so. I think that's a great idea. And yeah, we will definitely be looking for feedback from riders. And there may be something coming out from communications midway through. We'll also be collecting KPIs throughout and tracking those closely, because we're going to have to report back to council, and council will make that determination on whether fixed route goes forward or not after the 1-year pilot.
Coburg will have a new transit operator effective September 1st as Mobility Transportation Specialist takes over from Century. Champagne said during yesterday's meeting, though, that there will no longer be a local dispatcher as that operation will move to the MTS offices in the Toronto area. After the fixed route pilot launches, Champagne said staff will take up-to-date statistics to council throughout the year, including during budget deliberations, as council will eventually need to decide whether to continue the fixed route system beyond the one-year mark.
And thank you to Jeff Gard from CFWN Coburg for that story. Next up is CFRC's own Jesse Bell with the CFRC Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. After a run of swelteringly hot and humid weather, Kingston is experiencing something of a cool down. Daytime high of 22 degrees on Thursday, August 8th, with a mix of sun and cloud, dropping down to 18 overnight with a 30% chance of precipitation that remains consistent into Friday, August 9th, daytime high of 23 with that 30% chance of rain. Overnight dropping down to 17, bouncing back up to 23 on Saturday, August 10th. It's going to be cloudy all day and night. Sunday, August 11th, we're going to see a high of 22, but still gray clouds on the horizon dropping down to 16 overnight. And starting off next week, Monday, August 12th, we're going to see a daytime high of 23 with a mix of sun and cloud. So here in the city of Kingston, we're seeing consistent temperatures in that low to mid-20s range. This concludes your Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. This is Jesse Bell signing off and throwing it over to Dinah Jansen for CFRC's Community Concert and Events Calendar.
Thank you so much. And now it's time for the CFRC Community Concert and Events Calendar. Have an event you would like posted on our website and announced on our news programming? Reach out to us via cfrc.ca. And coming up on Thursday, August 8th, you can head over for Great Standards and Originals by local artist Michael K. Myers at the RCHA. Admission is $5 and the show gets going from 7 to 10 p.m. Also on August 8th, enjoy Sapphic Sirens, the queer caravan featuring music by queer femme, indie pop and rock bands The Black Void, Frankie Flowers Dichotomy, and Alia Archangel at The Mansion starting at 8:30 p.m. Admission is $17. And also on Thursday night, you can check out the Chris George Project with the Jacob River Milnes Music Group for a night of fun pop rock for free at the Toucan from 9:30 onwards. And now moving into your weekend, we've got a lot of great concerts for you. On Friday, August 9th, check out local indie rock outfit $5 Dates for free at Blue Martini from 7 to 10 p.m. And just down the street, the RCHA is hosting Happy Hour TJIF with Smoke and Roosters, a free show happening from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. and starting at 8 p.m., East Coast Juno and Maple Blues Award winner Garrett Mason is playing a show at the RCHA. Tickets are $15. And also on Friday, August 9th, get your funky friends and head on down to the Toucan for a free show featuring the Boo Radley Project, fusing funk, indie, and jazz for your dancing pleasure starting at 10:30 p.m. And then coming up on Saturday, August 10th at midday, head over to Confederation Park for free live music starting at 11:30, featuring performances by local acts, Third Time's a Charm, Rivercats, and Cacao. You can also walk down to the Juniper Cafe for summer live music, also happening on August 10th, featuring music on the cafe's waterfront patio by Doug van der Horden. The free event runs from 4 to 6 p.m. And also on August 10th, Many Moons Events presents an evening of moody Indian folk rock with local bands Funeral Lakes and Princess Towers, an all-ages event starting at 7 p.m. happening at 12 Cataraqui Street. Admission is $15 or pay what you can. And on Sunday, August 11th, take a drive out to Finkel's Shore Park in Bath for an afternoon of free music performed by Lucanus Pell at 3 p.m., Frank Ryan at 4 p.m., and also Abby Stewart at 5 p.m. And now it's time for the CFRC Community Events Calendar. If you have a community event you would like to promote on our airwaves and on our website, reach out to us via cfrc.ca. And coming up on August 5th, don't forget that the Theatre Kingston Fringe Festival is a theatre festival within the larger Kick and Push Festival running August 1st through 11th. There are many performances for the TK Fringe Festival that are performed at the Confederation Place Hotel, Davies Lounge, and Baby Grand. Visit thekickandpush.com or kingstongrand.ca for box office information. On Thursday, August 8th, folks can bring a lawn chair and a pal and head down to the Springer Market Square on Thursday night for a free screening of Beetlejuice starting at dusk. Also on Thursday, folks who are 55 years old or older seeking to connect with seniors can check out the weekly senior social group at the KCCU room at the Kingston Community Health Centers between 9:30 and 11:30 a.m. On Friday, August 9th, why not check out the 6-city guided walking tour facilitated by the Museum of Healthcare. 1-hour tours with 15 minutes of total walking times run between 10:30 and 2 p.m. Thursdays through Saturdays. Admission is $10 for adults and free for children under 12. Also on Friday, St. Mark's Lutheran is also hosting Balboa Social Dance on Friday with doors opening at 6:15 for all-level introductory Balboa dance lessons starting at 6:30. Admission is $5 for students and $8 for community members. And coming up on August 10th, come on down to City Park from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for the 41st Annual Women's Art Festival featuring over 150 artists and artisans, local live entertainment including music and dancing, local cuisine, and a children's activity tent. The event is free and all are welcome. And finally on Sunday, August 11th, Roots and Wings, a group for girls, trans, two-spirit, and gender nonconforming youth of color between ages 8 and 14 in Kingston, is hosting a free community gathering and potluck barbecue for BIPOC folks and their families. Join in the fun at 1 p.m. in Victoria Park and enjoy music, games, and activities. And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.